Listen, there's a great work to be done. As soon as you win this court battle, you must deliver this message. Take advantage of this opportunity and declare a powerful message to this world. He expects more of us. He believes we can do more. Who's going to stop Christ? Who's going to stop Christ from getting this work done?
This is Behind the Work.
Welcome to Behind the Work. I'm Grant Turgeon. We're broadcasting to you live this morning, March 18th, from the Herbert W. Armstrong College campus here in Edmond, Oklahoma. And as I walked in to our radio studio this morning, I noticed downstairs we have four ladies who are volunteering to pack mail. So I know we have a live audience of at least four people down there since the radio station was streaming through to them. I could hear it as I walked in. So thank you for listening, even if by default. And to the rest of you, thank you for tuning in. Our subject today is a pretty timely one because of something that happened over the weekend. But before we get into that, I just wanted to mention that we do have a variety of really interesting newsletters, email newsletters that have been produced. The Trumpet Brief is actually the oldest one, I believe, that we've been putting out. So that's even a relatively new one. And just last Tuesday, the Trumpet Brief reached over 25,000 subscribers. But that's not the only email newsletter that the church produces. There's also one about the news of the PCG. There's one that was just set up within the last two or three weeks, I believe, called PCG Signposts. And that's really about helping those who maybe aren't attending with the Philadelphia Church of God to understand some of our beliefs and hopefully understand the need for action. And then also, the Watch Jerusalem website puts one out. So by my count, there are at least four different church email newsletters that you can sign up for. And these are really beneficial, especially if maybe we've forgotten to check one of those sites over the past week. Then we get an email basically with all of the top information from those sites condensed down into just one message there for us. And that can spur us to go right back to that website once again. So you can sign up for those emails at thetrumpet.com, at pcg.church, and at watchjerusalem.co.il. Really helpful resources and really great tools for prayer as well. Great ways to understand what is happening in the work, what is happening in the world, so that we can watch and pray about that too. And one more thing before we get into today's main subject. Our concert manager here, Mr. Ryan Malone, is actually recording his final, or he just recorded his final Music for Life program of the season, and that will play next Monday afternoon, March 25th. And on that program, he interviewed one of the members of the Canadian Brass, so that's something that you can look forward to, and you can check kpcg.fm for the program schedule, and so you can know when all of the programs play. And of course, all of those programs are later available by podcast on the same website. All right, into our main subject for the day. We're going to be talking about personal appearance campaigns, the European edition. There have definitely been a lot of exciting campaigns within the last 5 months. In London, England, there was a campaign hosted by Trumpet Daily Radio Show host Stephen Fleury on October 21 and 22, 21st and 22nd. And then in Belfast, Northern Ireland, from January 19th through 20th. Then he hosted the first ever church online appearance campaign live at thetrumpet.com on February 24th. And just over the past weekend, he was in Glasgow, Scotland, March 16th and 17th for another campaign. An interesting development with those last two personal appearance campaigns in Belfast and Glasgow was that they tried out holding those campaigns on Saturday night and Sunday, which is a change from the regular Sunday and then Monday night format. That's something that I personally would like to see us try out for the personal appearance campaigns with Pastor General Gerald Fleury here in the U.S. and Canada. It does seem like perhaps we could have more people attend if the entire the entirety of the campaign took place over the weekend. However, that does require quite a few logistical changes, perhaps flying out on a Friday, spending the entire Sabbath in the area. And then, especially during the summer months when the sun sets much later, you'd have to wait pretty late Saturday night to even start those events. So those are some things to think about, but perhaps during the winter months it might be a little bit easier when the sun sets earlier to do a Saturday night and then Sunday version of the campaigns. They've been trying that out in, like I said, in Northern Ireland and Scotland, and it really does help with the attendance. It does allow a lot more people who came in from out of town especially to attend both lectures and not just the first one. Here's something that Mr. Stephen Fleury wrote in an October Trumpet Brief email, and this was about the first campaign in England. "This was the first time in the PCG's 29-year history that we have conducted a campaign in the United Kingdom, and we're thrilled. But this isn't the first time the church has campaigned in the UK. As many of you know, the PCG is a continuation of the work of Herbert W. Armstrong, who led the Worldwide Church of God. Mr. Armstrong began broadcasting across Britain and Europe in 1953 on the famous Radio Luxembourg station. In 1954, he delivered his first personal appearance campaign outside the United States in Belfast. In 1955, he established the church's first regional office outside America, right here in London, just off Leicester Square. In 1956, the first congregation in Britain started up with just 17 members. In 1959, the church established Ambassador College north of London in Brickett Wood. In 1961, Mr. Armstrong began broadcasting on offshore radio, and in 1965, he went on Radio London. The church advertised here in Reader's Digest and other publications throughout the 1960s and launched a smashingly successful newsstand program in 1971. By 1973, the work of the church here in Britain peaked, with 400,000 people receiving the church's magazine, The Plain Truth. That Belfast personal appearance campaign, among other things, led to great growth in the work and the message spreading to millions of people in Britain. We have high hopes that we can get that same message back out to millions more in print, in broadcast, and in person." So you can see that the personal appearance campaigns taking place over in the United Kingdom and Europe are just a continuation of the work done under Mr. Armstrong. And there is a long and successful history of God's work reaching out to that area. I was actually reading the autobiography of Herbert W. Armstrong recently, and chapter 63 is about his first it's titled First Evangelistic Campaign in British Isles. So this is about the first time Mr. Armstrong spoke in person to an audience outside the U.S., I believe. And there's a really interesting account here, so I'm just going to read a bit of this to you. It's really, it's quite humorous, and it's also quite inspiring, some of the things that took place on Mr. Armstrong's first trip. Here it says on page 786 under the subhead Planning Meetings in England, "Arriving in London, I thought it well to make personal contact with as many of our radio listeners as possible. To arrange for booking halls for meetings and placing some newspaper advertising, I decided to engage a London advertising agency." Then it just talks about how he was going to get the word out about the campaign to as many people as he could, but specifically to listeners of the radio station, Radio Luxembourg. It says here, "From our mailing list, we knew our largest groupings of listeners centered around London, Manchester, Birmingham, Belfast, Northern Ireland, and Glasgow, Scotland." So you can see within the last 6 months, the last 5 months or so, The Philadelphia Church of God has already had campaigns in three of those locations, London, Belfast, and Glasgow. And hopefully a lot of people who were in contact with Mr. Armstrong's work have also been able to attend those campaigns too, or at least heard about those campaigns and got interested in the work that we're doing. And then Mr. Armstrong talks a bit about some of his travels, some of the experiences he had while waiting for some of the meetings to take place. One big difference is that he did campaigns in London, Belfast, and Glasgow. It looks like all on the same trip. And so when they were traveling from place to place, they would sometimes board a ship, and then their car would be picked up by these big cables and then transported onto the ship for whenever they would depart in a new nation or disembark in a new nation. Let's see. All right. This is on page 789. And this is where I think the story gets really interesting. Evening came and time for the meeting. And so this is the one in Belfast. This is the first one that he ever did outside the U.S., I believe. Arrangements had been made for ushering in people at the hall, so we did not appear until 5 or 10 minutes before time for the service. The large hall, located in the very heart of the city center business district, was well filled. We found approximately 750 people waiting for us. Well, that's a pretty incredible turnout, especially considering what he says on page 790. There had been a small advertisement in the newspaper giving notice of the meeting, but no attempt had been made to draw any audience beyond our own interested radio listeners. So an audience of 750 was a very, very warm welcome to Belfast. People had come from miles around. One had pushed another interested listener a great distance in a wheelchair to a bus in order to attend. My message that night was on what's prophesied for Britain. And he then tells the people there about how he had just been traveling through Germany right before this campaign and how Germany rebuilt itself so quickly after World War II. And here's a direct quote from that campaign. He said, "What is prophesied for the United Kingdom and for the United States? I have crossed America and the Atlantic Ocean to tell you things I can't say on the radio. What I'm now going to say is not popular, but it is as certain as the rising and setting of tomorrow's sun. Yet on beyond it all, after our peoples have been punished, as no nations ever were before, world peace is coming in our time." And that really remains true to this day. I've had the pleasure of attending every one of the most recent campaigns of Mr. Gerald Fleury across the U.S. and then even once in Toronto, Canada. And they are a completely different level of message than what you would hear on the TV program or even on the radio in many cases, because the audience is different. These are people who have traveled oftentimes from other states entirely, maybe driven 6 or 7 hours in some cases, just to visit with Mr. Fleury in person, just to hear from him in person. So by definition, these are people who are really excited to attend, to make contact with God's work in person. They've made a pretty big commitment. That's much more than just calling in to headquarters and asking for literature. To be able to travel for that much of a distance, for that many hours, really does show that they have a serious interest in what we're talking about. And because it's a more serious audience, the message is a lot more direct. These are a select few people who have really taken action just to show up at these events. And that's why I can tell you from experience is these messages are very intense, very direct, and they're extremely inspiring. And hopefully people come away with a clear understanding of what God expects them to do with that information. Continuing here in the autobiography of Herbert W. Armstrong, and this entire massive, nearly 1,000-page book is available for free at thetrumpet.com, and you can start reading it digitally right now, even before you get your physical copy. Page 790. The audience showed tremendous interest. After the service, our two cars were driven on a boat. We all had sleeping accommodations on the boat for the night. Next morning, we were docked at Glasgow. That night, another good audience, equally warm and friendly and interested, assembled in a hall in downtown Glasgow. The crowd there was smaller, perhaps 450 or 500. But still, that's very good because a lot of the time we'll get maybe 250 around there if it's a really good turnout. And of course, the second night, the Monday night, at least for the ones here in North America, there's going to be fewer people because they had to travel all the way home after that Sunday meeting. And if they came from 7 hours away, of course, they couldn't come all the way back for the Monday night event. But it just shows you it's a lot harder to get the message out today to people who are actually receptive to it. There are a lot more distractions today than there were back at that time. So even an audience of 200 or 150, an audience where even just one person responds is definitely an audience that is worth visiting and delivering that message to, even if it is a bit smaller. Continuing in the quote here, Thursday we drove down to Manchester. The hall there was on the third or fourth floor of a building. There was only the one lift, elevator to our American readers. The hall here was smaller, but we had an overflow crowd, much to the displeasure of the lift operator. Extra chairs had to be brought into the auditorium, and several had to stand. I must have spoken about an hour or a little over, but after about 45 minutes, the lift operator came in, interrupted the service, and wanted me to stop talking so he could close up the lift and go home. But I had come a long distance to deliver a super serious, life and death message to hundreds of my radio listeners, and I was not going to cut that message off to please a disgruntled lift operator. The hall had been engaged for the entire evening. A good many had to hear more of this man's bad attitude before everybody had finally been taken to the ground floor after the meeting was dismissed. I was so thoroughly disgusted with his uncalled for ill behavior, I expressed myself rather sharply to him as I descended in the final trip of the lift for that night. The crowd there was slightly smaller than at Glasgow, but still an overflow crowd. So I think we can all appreciate just the effort Mr. Armstrong went into to give us so many specific details in his autobiography, even with regard to that lift operator there in England who wanted to go home early. So that's definitely something we can pray about on all the campaigns that we have, both over in Europe but also here in North America. Hopefully we can have receptive or at least very accommodating hosts at the various hotels and meeting halls that we book, people who are willing to negotiate based on price, negotiate based on the time or the availability of the hall. Thankfully, I've never experienced anything like what Mr. Armstrong recounted there. But there are times where maybe the meeting hall is connected to like the big kitchen in the hotel. And sometimes you can hear dishes or utensils being scattered around as they're being cleaned. And sometimes it's a little bit too loud. So those are details we can definitely be thinking about, because think about people who have, maybe they just stopped in because they live 5 minutes away and they just wanted to see what it was all about. How distracting could it be just to have dishes and utensils rattling around right behind where Mr. Fleury is delivering that lecture? That can really throw some people off. And thankfully, it doesn't seem like that affects too many people, but it can definitely be a frustrating experience sometimes for some people too. Also, just praying about the audience itself, that no one in the audience is too distracting either. That hasn't been too big of a problem, but definitely some people can get pretty fired up and start responding rather loudly to some things that are said. And that could definitely distract people too. So even just to have an hour and a half of undistracted time where they can focus on this powerful message, that's something that really is important. And it really could make the difference between some people taking action and some people not. If you want to read more about these personal appearance campaigns, there's a great article from the February 2019 Philadelphia Trumpet News Magazine by Mr. Philip Nice, and it's titled The Trumpet in Person. And it gives a lot of great details about what happens behind the scenes on these campaigns. All the details that go into booking and arranging a hall and setting it up for the meetings, what's talked about, what the interactions with the audience are like. Some great details there in that February 2019 Trumpet magazine, which you can find the archive version of at thetrumpet.com. And hopefully I can keep on giving you some stories about these campaigns as they happen, and keep reporting to you from the scene, because certainly a lot of you are very interested in what happens behind the scenes. That's sometimes the information that gets the biggest response on the radio, just telling some things that happen behind the scenes. So we'll definitely make every effort to deliver some more of those details to you on future programs. Well, it's been great speaking with you this morning, and until our program next Monday, I'm Grant Turgeon. This has been Trumpet Bookshelf. Or, excuse me, Behind the Work. First time I've done that.
You've been listening to Behind the Work. Email your thoughts to comments at kpcg.fm. Listen for a new episode each Monday at 11:30 a.m. Central Time.